Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour has read so much and has so many books. I think at one point in his book he says he has 4,000 books in his library. It's how he happened to write the book and did interviews with so many military leaders is interesting. The book we're talking about is The Leader's Work Bookshelf. And our guest, who is at the very top of the military, Admiral James Stavridis, is with us. And he, well, let me just tell you a little bit about him. He's a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, and he spent more than 35 years on active service in the U.S. Navy. He commanded destroyers and a carrier strike group in combat and served for 7 years as a four-star admiral, culminating with 4 years as the 16th Supreme Allied Commander at NATO. He also has a PhD in international relations and is on the, he's the dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. So he was thinking about the best leaders in the country, and he did interviews with some 200 top military leaders to find out what it is they were reading, because reading for the admiral has been so important in his life and in his work that we can learn wonderful lessons about leadership through reading. And they came up with a list of the books that were mentioned most frequently by these military leaders. It's a list of 50 books covering the spectrum, some that you might expect from Winston Churchill, from Dwight Eisenhower, from, a whole host of people who were in the Civil War, people who fought in World War II on the German side. But it's a very, in the Vietnam War, it's a very interesting list of books, many of which I thought, oh, I need to read this. So the Admiral is with us this hour of the program to talk about reading, how leaders can learn and grow through reading, the importance of reading in his life, what he reads in the course of a day. I think we'll start there because this man reads a whole lot. And we'll also go through, of course, some of the books that are recommended in this wonderful book. Somebody recommended this book to me, and I can't remember who, but whoever did along the way, thank you so much, because I found it most enjoyable. Our phone number for the calls for Admiral James Stavridis is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. Admiral Stavridis, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, great to be with you. What a treat to be talking to so many folks in the Wisconsin area.
Yeah, it's a good area. I really enjoyed your book. I must say, there are a lot of books that I haven't read, but many of them I had and liked all of the ones that are on the list, and just will now plow into many of the others. You, though, I want to start with you. You probably read more than anybody I know. I can't believe what you consume every day. It's a lot.
I do. Part of that, Kathleen, is I grew up in Greece.
Oh, you did?
A little boy. Yes, in the 1960s. Greek-American, obviously, and my dad was assigned at the U.S. Embassy there. He was in the military also.
Hmm.
And here's the trick. In those years, there was no television in Greece.
Ah.
In the 1960s, right. So every week, my mom would trot me down to the library, and I'd check out a big stack of books, and it led me to become a lifelong reader.
So tell me about what you read in the course of the day, because it's amazing. So you talk about, you wrote about this for an article in the Atlantic, I believe, also on your list. But you wake up in the morning, and where do you go?
I come into work. I'm at my desk about 6. And
whoa!
I leave. Yeah. And believe me, I work at a university now, and I am essentially the only person on campus at 6 o'clock in the morning,
no,
I assure you. And so I have time free, Kathleen, from 6 to 9, and I do a great deal of reading then. My normal consumption, once I plow through the normal emails that we all deal with, I read The Economist, which is a frontline international relations magazine. It comes out every week. I read that absolutely cover to cover.
Mm.
I read a number of newspapers every day. So I go through New York Times and Washington Post online. And I also block off some time in that three-hour chunk to do the kind of reading that you see reflected in the Leader's Bookshelf books. Try to do a balance of fiction and nonfiction. And I also try during that period to do my own writing, and I do a monthly column for Time Magazine and a another monthly column for Foreign Policy magazine. So that three-hour chunk is very essential to me, kind of my reading and writing time.
You know, I've never heard this before, and as I was reading, because I have to do an enormous, not have to, it's a luxury of the job, but I do a lot of reading, not as much as you do, but a lot of reading. But I like this idea that you had. So yesterday, when I was celebrating Mother's Day and doing some work in the garden and reading your book, I started it before yesterday, by the way, but you have this suggestion that we master the art of reading books in shorter bursts. So it's okay to read for 15 minutes, part of your book, then go outside and plant some flowers, and then come in and read some more and read the newspaper, but never have to sit and think, oh, I have to read this in 4 hours.
Yeah, I think so many people, Kathleen, are of the mind that, boy, if I can't block out a huge amount of time, 2-3 hours, and sit and just plow through a book, then that's just not a good use of my time. I really disagree with that, especially today when you can load books on your iPad Mini, your Kindle. These are tiny devices, but still very readable. And so that gives you the luxury of being able to read anywhere, anytime, even if it's 15 minutes while you're commuting to work on the city bus or standing in a line at a grocery counter. I've actually, believe it or not, I read books on my iPhone. And it's Yeah, it's a tiny screen, but if I'm going to stand in line at the grocery store for 5-10 minutes, I'll just get out my iPhone. And, of course, the beauty is all these devices are synced up, so you open it exactly to the page you left off at, and you get a quick burst of reading, and there you go. Mm-hmm. I also do a lot of traveling. I'm a dean of a graduate school of international relations, so I'm on airplanes a lot around the world, and so that's another luxurious time to really sit and read. I'll give you one other trick about how to read a lot of books, and that's what I call read fast in order to read slow. And what I mean by that is at the start of each week, pick out a couple of books that you are kind of candidate books and try and go through them very quickly, kind of skimming along with them. And then by the end of the week, you'll know which book you really want to sit and read over the weekend. And so that kind of get yourself exposed to a lot of books, but then select the ones you really want to read a bit more carefully is read fast in order to read slow.
And almost all the military, I would imagine, all who are in this book, the people that you interviewed for this book, more than 200 military leaders, you say that they all are avid readers. It's very important for leaders to do reading.
I think it's crucial. So if you think about how you become a better leader, there's sort of three or four things that are happening. First of all, you're born with a set of attributes, right? Maybe you're tall, which I am not, and you have great executive hair, and you have a striking presence. I'm none of those things. I wasn't given those gifts, but some people are given those kind of gifts at birth. Perhaps they're very articulate. They're have a kind of a basket of attributes that they're given at birth. Secondly, you have experiences, both good and bad, and that shapes you. Thirdly, your parents and your family as you're raised, that is a crucial element. And then fourth, and this gets us to reading, I think you can become a better leader by reading. And it's not the only thing that will make you a good leader, but what it does, Kathleen, is it exposes you to other situations, other places, other times, other ways people have chosen to try and exercise leadership. I'll give you an example. Take the book Killer Angels,
yes,
which is about the Battle of Gettysburg.
Love that book.
It's a gorgeous novel by Michael Shara, and it shows you so many different styles of leadership, and it teaches you that there's no one cookie-cutter way to be a leader. You can be the cerebral, serene Robert E. Lee, or you can be the incredibly passionate Joshua Chamberlain of Maine, who stood on Little Round Top and saved the Union. There are different kinds of leadership, and books become a part of becoming a better leader because you get to observe and go inside the mind of other leaders.
Mm-hmm. I was so happy that book was number one on the list, and I must say, I almost hate to admit this, that I didn't encounter it earlier in my life, but I was at Gettysburg probably 7 years ago or so, and just wanted to read everything I could about that battle and about the Civil War, and it just began this whole long journey of even more Abraham Lincoln reading. But everybody recommended The Killer Angels. Everybody at Gettysburg said, if you read one book from this bookstore, this is the one, so I got it, and there it was, number one on your list.
It's an absolutely perfect book, and it's incredibly readable, but it's just full of lessons about life and personality, and just a gorgeous book. Mm-hmm. Have you read it's a relatively new novel that's out called Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders?
I know, I've seen it, but I haven't read it yet. Should I?
You really should.
Okay.
It's extraordinary. It's Abraham Lincoln mulling over the death of his son, and it is just beautifully, beautifully realized. A very different novel than Killer Angels, but it's just a full throated study of how we deal with tragedy and fathers and sons.
Mm.
It's got an unforgettable cast of characters. Really recommend it. Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. I'm glad we talked. It's on my list, and I will read it. Some of the other people that you use for inspiration, I think you say this about yourself, that if there are times when you're stuck in writing that you find inspiration from Winston Churchill, that you'll read a little Winston Churchill, or you might read a little of the King James Bible, that it will help you, what, formulate a sentence? Or what's the inspiration?
What works for me, and I don't know if it works for others, but if I find myself kind of locking up as I'm writing, I'll read those two, Churchill or the King James Bible, and it's the rhythm, Kathleen. It's sort of the sweeping rhythm in both of those works of literature that help you kind of retool and put a better, more structured sentence together, both very crystalline examples of prose.
This Churchill was quite a writer, wasn't he? Where did he develop that? He won the Pulitzer. He's a beautiful writer.
He also, I think, won the Nobel.
Yes. I think you're right.
So where he developed it was in his public school education, coming up through, I think he went to Eton, and then then he went to Sandhurst, the British military academy, and he was also just a gifted. This gets back to the gifts we are given. He was an extremely communicative person, obviously, and of course thought of by many as one of the great orators of the 20th century. When someone has the ability to pull together that kind of writing, it's so affirmative, and the style of it really works. And let me give you another book recommendation. I promise I won't keep doing this.
No, but that's fine. That's why we're here.
Okay, but not on the list of 50 books, but one of my very favorite memoirs is called My Early Years, A Roving Commission.
Okay.
And it's about Churchill's first kind of 35 years of life. He wrote it because he thought in the 1930s that he would never do anything else interesting again. And of course, ahead of him was the Second World War and saving his country and perhaps saving the world. So it tells the story of him as a very young man. Then he goes off to Afghanistan. He's fighting with the British there. Then he ends up in South Africa in the Boer War. It's a great memoir of a young man on the move.
Mm. And he did receive, I'm reading part of your chapter where you give a summary of each of these books. He won the well-deserved, as you write, Nobel Prize in Literature. His magnificent prose rolls along like thunder and lightning. Reading his description of events is like opening the King James Bible and listening to the epic story of the creation of the world. Whoa!
It's amazing. Yes, he's I think on everybody's short list of extraordinary figures in history and just instinctive leaders. And there's a lot to learn from the life of Churchill.
Mm. And somewhere along the line, you talk about Eisenhower's relationship with him and how Eisenhower He liked the guy, certainly, but just dreaded when he came to visit because they were going to be up all darn night, right?
Absolutely. No, he was also famous for his ability to consume massive quantities of alcohol, a full bottle of spirits, generally brandy, plus a bottle of champagne daily. So this is a gentleman who knew his way not only around the councils of war, but also around a good wine cellar. And how he did that and how he functioned is testament to his strength of character and his physiology. Also on the list, I think number 14 on the list, is a biography of Winston Churchill called The Last Lion by William Manchester. Mm-hmm. It's the final volume of, I think, it's a three-volume study of the life of Churchill by William Manchester, and this volume is particularly extraordinary. So Churchill, not only do we have a biography about him, but we also, of course, have what most people would say his greatest work is called simply The Second World War. It's a six-volume study, but it's a page-turner and is an extraordinary book.
Mm. I was also glad, I'm thinking about him because we had David McCullough on last week, who wrote this book, the best speeches from the last 25 years that talk about the American condition. I found it a wonderful read. It was my read for last week because we interviewed him. But you included the Truman book and spent quite a bit of time talking about Truman. He's number 15 on the list. I mean, here was somebody who you wouldn't expect to become president, who had to make this incredibly huge, momentous decision to drop an atomic bomb.
He did. And, Truman was kind of the accidental president in almost every sense. He famously was in the dry goods clothing business back home and comes into government through a kind of circuitous means, ends up as the vice president, which he described as not being worth a bucket of spit. And then through the death of FDR, is catapulted into the presidency and becomes one of our best 20th century presidents by, I think, anybody's measure these days. Did David McCullough comment on Truman at all?
He did. He talked about a little bit about Truman. We covered because he writes about so many presidents, but he really thought pretty highly of Truman, too, and he loved writing that book. He said he's one of the presidents who's not as noticed as he should be.
Yes, I agree with that completely. And also, I think of all our presidents, perhaps the least ego-driven or among the least ego-driven. And also, we ought to remember that he had the kind of political courage it took to stare down one of the huge charismatic military figures of those days, General Douglas MacArthur.
Right.
You'll recall MacArthur had been this World War II hero and had fought the Pacific and then was the Viceroy of Japan and then was thrown into the Korean War and was by all accounts going to run for the presidency, but he was insubordinate to President Truman, and Truman took him on and fired him and showed that kind of strength of character. It's one of the many instances in Truman's life where he did the hard right instead of taking the easy way out.
Hmm. I'm beginning to think, because you're at work at 6 o'clock in the morning and you write about Truman getting to work. He was an early riser because he helped his dad on the farm. That maybe one of the secrets of leadership is to get up early in the morning. Is it?
Well, certainly Benjamin Franklin, early to bed, early to rise.
Right.
And healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Right.
I think partly that's the military culture. After 37 years on active duty in the U.S. Navy, I'm just used to an early start. But I do think there is something to getting up, getting ahead of the day, and having, perhaps more importantly, Kathleen, is having that time to reflect and think is invaluable, not only in creating leadership, but also just in keeping your life in balance.
Hmm. Well, we're going to take phone calls. We've only mentioned a couple of books that are on the list. You can find all of them, of course, all 50 books, with summaries of what the leadership lessons are in each of these important books and very interesting information about the authors as well. The Leader's Bookshelf is what we're talking about, and our guest is quite a reader himself and has used his reading in his important leadership roles. Admiral James Stavridis, Stavridis has spent more than 35 years on active service in the U.S. Navy. He's now at Tufts University, where he's dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy and travels, as you heard him say, all over the world. He has written 6 books, all kinds of articles on global security and on leadership. He is having served for 7 years as a 4-star admiral. He was 4 years as the 16th Supreme Allied Commander at NATO. Our phone calls for Admiral James Stavridis is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter is @KDunnShow, and this is the Ideas Network. Okay, lots of phone calls coming in for Admiral James Stavridis, and let's start our calls with Steve in Tomahawk. Hi, Steve.
Hello there. You have read a lot by President Grant, who almost really did a good job, I guess, of trying to wipe out the Ku Klux Klan. And I'm wondering about his personality and some of those early Republican, the first civil rights presidents who really kind of stood up against that, what their personalities were like when Lincoln and Grant were working together in that era after the Civil War.
All right, yeah, let's start with Grant because he's on the book. He's on the list of books. Admiral?
Yes, he is. And, here for the caller, I'd really recommend reading Grant's memoirs. There's really no better book that gives you a sense of the kind of moral courage that was required in that period of time. Grant wrote those famously as he was dying of throat cancer, trying to secure a financial future for his wife, Julia. And they are deeply personal and take you inside the mind of a gifted leader who certainly struggled himself with his demons, with alcoholism and allegations of corruption. But by the end of his life, and these memoirs were written literally in the last few weeks of his life, last couple of months of his life, you see the kind of character and moral fiber required at that time.
Thanks very much for your call. Sharon in Marquette, Michigan. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I've been listening, and I'm very fascinated by everything that your guest has talked about, but I'm wondering if he has any women leaders on his list because, the world is made up of 50% women, and, we do have a lot of problems in our world, and men who are leading, and I would like to know if he thinks any women are worth their salt to be on his list.
Oh, absolutely. And let me begin by pointing out that a number of the books are written by women. To Kill a Mockingbird, for example, by Harper Lee, is an extremely powerful leadership book, really to the call from the earlier guest as well, the earlier caller. It's a story about the kind of moral courage it takes in the South to stand up to the racism that was on evidence there in the trial and the novel. As well, we have a 4-star woman admiral who recommended several of the books, and she's just herself a special kind of leader. She's currently over in Europe. Her name is Michelle Davis, and she is in charge of all the NATO forces in the Mediterranean. She recommended the book number 38 on the list called Buffalo Soldiers, a narrative of the cavalry in the West. So absolutely to the caller. Now, having said that, this book has been put together by kind of crowdsourcing senior military officers who are at this point, kind of 85% male, because that reflects the character and the style of the military. But the military's moved on and learned a lot over the last several decades. When I came into the Navy, women were not serving in submarines at all. They weren't serving in destroyers or cruisers, warships. They were not flying fighter aircraft. Today we have a woman in command of the 3rd Fleet of the United States. We have women fighter pilots dropping bombs on Iraq and Syria. We have women in nuclear submarines. We've had innumerable destroyers commanded by women. So there's just no question that we have moved on, as society has moved on, to get those ideas. And some of the best leaders I know are women in the context of the military as well as elsewhere.
And some of the books certainly are written by leaders, too. Number 4 on the list is Doris Kearns Goodwin's Team of Rivals.
Exactly. And I'm proud to say Doris lives right here in New England. She lives in Lincoln, Massachusetts. I live next door in Lexington, Massachusetts. And we're good friends. And I was thrilled to include that book on the list. And worth knowing also that when I went to see President Trump, he asked me in December of last year to come and chat with him about leadership, and one of the books I recommended and he has followed up on is Team of Rivals, because I think any president needs to understand how to put teams together, and nobody did that better than Abraham Lincoln.
So Donald Trump is reading that book?
I saw it on his desk in Trump Tower. I have not actually witnessed him opening and reading it, but it was on his desk when I went to chat with him. Oh, by the way, can I just make a point about Afghanistan, since you said you're going to be working on that tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
There's a terrific novel about Afghanistan, about a military campaign in Afghanistan, Kathleen, and it's about the very first military campaign in Afghanistan, which is not the one we're currently in with NATO, not the Russian campaign from the 1980s, not the British campaigns that Winston Churchill fought in around the turn of the last century. This is the campaign of Alexander the Great, the Greek leader who actually made his way through Afghanistan 2,000-plus years ago. The book is called The Afghan Campaign, and it's by Stephen Pressfield, who is also on the list for a book he wrote about the Battle of Thermopylae. But The Afghan Campaign has a lot of lessons in it, not only about leadership, but about Afghanistan, as we try and understand what our next move is in that very complicated country.
Well, I think we should have you on a future show to answer that very question, because we're having a hard time answering that.
I know it.
Yeah. Another book that we were thinking of women in the book, but I haven't read this. I would like to at some point. There are several books that look at Vietnam and the horrors of Vietnam and our failures of Vietnam. In Love and War, number 20 on the list, the story of a family's ordeal and the sacrifice during the Vietnam years.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite books on the list. Having grown up in a military family, my father was a Marine colonel who deployed to World War II, to Korea, and to Vietnam. And I remember as a teenager watching my father, at the time a Marine lieutenant colonel, heading off to Vietnam and standing there with my mother as a young teenager watching my father go to war. He was gone for 13 months and fought in and around the city of Da Nang in Vietnam. So In Love and War really hits home for me, because it's a book about then commander, Navy commander and fighter pilot James Stockdale, who is launching an attack over Vietnam and is shot down, captured, and spends years in the Hanoi Hilton in prison, like John McCain and others. And so the book, In Love and War, is alternating chapters, one written by James Stockdale, reflecting his experiences as a POW and a naval officer, and the other chapter written by his wife, Sybil Stockdale, talking about her experiences as a Navy spouse, trying to be supportive and trying to keep her faith through some very, very dark times. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous work of art.
Chuck on Facebook asks, I'm not familiar with this, if you could comment on the book, Turn the Ship Around, A True Story of Turning Followers into Leaders. Do you know that?
I do. I think it's a very good book. You know, there's a number of these naval captains who have kind of gone forward and written books that reflect their challenges at sea and how those can apply. I think Turn the Ship Around is by David Marquette.
Yes, it is.
It's I'd rate it very high. I think it's a well done book, and your readers listener is right to point it out. I'll give you one other one by a guy named Mike Abershoff. It's called It's Your Ship, and it kind of takes the same ideas. But I think David's book is quite good, and I'm glad your listener points it out for us.
Ed is next in West Allis. Hi.
Hi. Well, for those of us that are pacifists in the crowd today, I hope somewhere on the list is James Joyce's Ulysses. Those of us that went through the seminary got all this blood and gore when we had to translate the Iliad and even the Odyssey and Virgil's Aeneid. And when you get to Joyce, this is the great pacifist epic. Nobody really dies except Patty Gingham and Ulysses. And I hope military people will take it up and plow through the 746 pages.
Have you? I have not read it all yet.
Well,
I have to admit that.
Yeah, let me jump in. Let me jump in. And I'm thrilled your listener mentions Ulysses. I love the book. It's a big, difficult, challenging book, as are many of the things that he wrote. I also like Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, which is a much shorter and approachable novel. What I do want to point out on the list is many of the books are really about how awful war is.
Yes.
As Tecumseh Sherman, famous Civil War general, said, no one hates war like a soldier. I'd point to We Were Soldiers Once and Young by General Hal Moore and Joseph Galloway, The Face of Battle by John Keegan, The General by Forster. These are books that are not celebrating war, but quite the opposite, are pointing out that war is failure. When you enter a combat, you have failed. Diplomacy has failed. The ideas of soft power have failed. The best book on the list to that point is, in fact, The General by C.S. Forster, which is about the failure of generals in the First World War. And your listener's very, very right to point that out. You know, speaking of Ulysses, the novel, by the way, which is a wonderful use of Greek early literature. This is Homer, of course. Ulysses then taken into the modern world. There's a whole series of books that explore PTSD, post-traumatic disorder syndrome, about our veterans, our wounded warriors, what they're coping with, and it uses Greek mythology to try and understand them. The best of them, I think, is called Achilles in Vietnam by Jonathan Shea. Maybe your listener would like that book, Achilles in Vietnam by Jonathan Shea. Anyway, thanks for the call. No conversation about books is complete without a mention of Ulysses, so well done.
Yes. Thank you very much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest, who is one remarkable reader himself and has had a distinguished military career and a distinguished career at the university as well, he is the author of The Leader's Bookshelf, Admiral James Stavridis is with us, and he is now at Tufts University, where he is Dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. He commanded destroyers in a carrier strike group in combat and served for 7 years as a four-star admiral, culminating with 4 years as the 16th Supreme Allied Commander at NATO. He knows that a lot of military leaders are very, very avid readers, and they need that to learn about leadership and to learn strategy and commanding troops, et cetera. So he interviewed over 200 military leaders, current and retired, to find out what books have been important in their formulating decisions about how they are going to lead. And it's really an interesting list. So they found they went 1 to 50 with the most common answers, and all of the books are are interesting. They all look like books you'd like to read, be you in the military or not, because they're about leadership. So we're welcoming phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at Kay Dunn Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Here's a book that was number 5 on your list, and you must tell me why this is still so widely read, because this one goes way back to the 6th century B.C., The Art of War.
It's read, first of all, because it's full of wisdom for leaders. Mm. It is a book, to the previous call, by the way, about war and whether it works or not. This is a book that says the greatest victory is the battle that is never fought. It is using all of the tools of diplomacy, economics, politics to shift your opponent. It's kind of a jujitsu book of war, written by a warrior master from centuries ago. Secondly, it is a window into the mind of Asia. It's a book that's widely read and understood by the Chinese, the Koreans, the Japanese. So for any student of history, anyone who seeks to understand the military philosophical traditions of the East, Sun Tzu has to be on the list. It's read in all of the war colleges of the United States, all the military.
Really?
Absolutely. Huh. This is not some obscure, dusty book that hardly comes off the shelf. It's been in print for 1,000 years.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. It's a very powerful and very readable book, quite short. Probably the closest thing in Western literature is The Prince by Machiavelli.
Oh.
So it's a window into a great deal of Asian thinking and philosophy, and in that sense is quite helpful.
Hmm. Let's go next to Manbir from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for letting me speak. Since our honorable guest was talking about Afghanistan and reading about the leaders, those who have been in there or those who had, like, the winning streak or those who were more successful winning there, I would like to suggest that actually there is a book named Hari Singh Nalwa, General Hari Singh Nalwa, Builder of the Sikh Empire. According to my knowledge, I'm not a very big reader, but I think he was the only one who ever won Afghanistan.
Certainly, the saying goes, Afghanistan has been the graveyard of empires. And when various nations, including the Greeks, as we talked about under Alexander the Great, the British in the 19th century, the Russians in the 20th century, NATO in the 21st century, Afghanistan is very tough terrain. The Pashtuns in particular, although there are multiple other ethnic groups in Afghanistan, but the Pashtuns are very tough fighters, and they have an intense sense of nationalism. So it's been very, very difficult and challenging. I'll look into the book your caller recommends. He mentions the Sikhs of India's. These, of course, is a religion and also a life philosophy in India, and the Sikhs are very fundamental to the Indian military. They are in the Indian military in very high and disproportionate numbers. Historically, they've been very well regarded as professional soldiers and sailors. I know Sikh naval personnel. I know a Sikh admiral. So I'll check out that book. And it makes sense to me that that the Sikhs would have success in Afghanistan, although to date it's hard to point to anyone who's really been able to contain the fractiousness of Afghanistan.
So how do you, in addition to doing all this reading, how do you find enough space in your brain to remember everything?
Well, first of all, I don't think any of us do remember everything, but I'll just go back to, because I started reading intensely at such a young age, I think it's as though I learned another language as a very young man, and I just am able to hold books and authors and thoughts and have a pretty good memory for the printed page. It's just the way my mind works. I'm less good at remembering appointments and when my sister's birthday is and things like that. So, you know, we all get certain gifts, and I guess to the degree I've honed my ability to read and retain that kind of literary knowledge, it's been helpful as I've gone through.
Oh, I imagine it served you well. It's a great talent to have. Is it Mighty from Milwaukee?
Yes, Maida.
Maida, hi Maida.
I just wanted to mention a wonderful book and tragic book, All Quiet on the Western Front, by Eric Maria Remarque, which I read when I was young, and it affected me very deeply. And I also don't want to forget about the battles in the Hebrew Bible and the great leader that was Joshua.
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about the Bible yet.
I completely agree with that. Both those comments, All Quiet on the Western Front, is one of the most moving novels ever written, very reflective of the tragic experiences of the First World War, follows a young German soldier to his fate. It's an extraordinary book, and I'm glad your listener mentioned it. The Bible is endlessly full of leadership lessons from the Lord himself to many of the prophets to Joshua, as your caller recommends. And I think the Bible read as literature is very rewarding, particularly, again, to my ear, the King James Version is particularly appealing. Mm-hmm. So I echo the caller's sentiment. Mm.
I think you mentioned, in terms of leadership, the leadership book of your book says is Isaiah. You also mentioned Noah with the great flood, and David and Goliath.
Exactly. All three are lessons. But, I mean, literally, you could go through basically any of the really epic stories in the Bible and talk about leadership. And, of course, moving to the Christian faith and the sacrifice of Jesus is the ultimate in servant leadership. And so whether you want to read that religiously or as a work of literature, I think in both cases it helps you understand how to be a good leader yourself. The essence of leadership, Kathleen, is serving those whom you would lead.
Mm. You also read poetry. It's not necessarily in the book, but when you talk about your reading, you find room to read poets, and you mention Yeats.
I do.
Yeah, that was great.
Back to Ulysses and James Joyce. I would put of the great Irish writers, I would put William Butler Yeats up there with anybody.
Hmm.
And the poem that I do include in the book is called The Second Coming, which is a very moving short poem and a very dark poem about Yeats's sense. And the poem was written at the early part of the last century. I just flipped it open here in the book. I'll just read it. The opening is turning and turning in the widening gyre. The falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Anarchy is loosed upon the world. And so the setup of this poem is of a world that's spinning apart. And I think as we look at all the challenges around the globe today, 100 years later, we feel that as well. And the poem concludes with the two lines, "And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born." Hmm. Pretty dark poem, and yet beautifully written, and helps us understand that even in all the turbulence of our times in this 21st century, others have faced these challenges 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 2,000 years ago. Literature is that long, unbroken chain of experience, and Yeats's poem reminds us of that.
Yes. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Mitch in Windsor. Hello, Mitch.
Hi. 19th century biography, most phenomenal biography I've ever read, is of William Gladstone by John Morley. It's a remarkable book. Gladstone was a remarkable guy, and the biography has lots of his letters, and, I mean, it's really incredible. Strongly recommend it if you haven't seen it.
I have not read that. I will. I've jotted it down. I will counter it, if I may, with a number of marvelous biographies about a contemporary who is Benjamin Disraeli, who is just like Gladstone, a kind of a larger-than-life character. The one I like of Disraeli is by Stanley Weintraub. It's just called Disraeli, a Biography. It was written over 20 years ago, but I'm an admirer of that period, and I think Gladstone certainly bears study as a leader as well. To contrast him and Disraeli is a marvelous exercise in leadership, and I'm glad the caller mentioned it.
Was it Weintraub who wrote that small volume that I always read around the holidays about the Christmas truce? Or was that somebody else?
I don't know. But I bet your producer could find that out for us really quickly.
Yeah, except she's on the phone with somebody else, I think.
Yeah,
internet is down. But somebody call us. Somebody will know. A listener. We'll go to a listener. A listener will know.
Yeah, we'll crowdsource it.
Yeah, exactly. Mitch, thanks very much for your call. Chris in Green Bay. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi,
thanks
Chris.
For having me. I'd like to get the Admiral's take on Tim O'Brien, one of my favorite authors.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. Tim O'Brien, for other readers, is one of the great writers of the Vietnam War. He's probably pushing 70. I think he lives down in Austin, Texas. He's won, I want to say the National Book Award. His best book I like, I'm sure your caller knows it, is The Things They Carry.
Yes.
About Vietnam. His other kind of iconic Vietnam book is Going After Kakachito, and I'm probably misspeaking. Yes, thank you. There you go. I think those are my two favorites. What do you think?
I agree. Yeah, they're really great.
Yeah. My other author of Vietnam that maybe you haven't read is on this list of books is a book called Matterhorn. And Matterhorn is the story of a young Marine second lieutenant's first 60 days in combat in Vietnam, and it is a kind of like MASH, you know, the North Korea war book. It sort of updates that kind of that kind of the absurdity of war, I think, is what comes across in Matterhorn. And it is an absolutely terrific book. It's by Carl Marlantes, and it has a kind of an interesting backstory to it, which is that it's a memoir, essentially, although it's done up as a novel. And Marlantes wrote it over 30 years. It was 900 pages. He couldn't get anybody to publish it. Yeah, it's Thomas Wolfe of Time in the River. Eventually, he finally convinced, I think it's Random House, I'm not positive of the publisher, but they took a chance on it and bang, won the National Book Award. Highly acclaimed, and he's a writer I'd put in the same category as Tim O'Brien.
I did read that book shortly after WPR interviewed the author.
Oh, did you?
Oh, excellent. Yeah, he's very good. And, of course, Senator James Webb has written a number of great books about Vietnam, one of which is called Fields of Fire, and I think I'm going to bet that the caller has read that one as well. Hmm.
If not, he's about to. Have you, Chris?
I have not yet, but I will.
There you go.
Oh, gosh, Chris, I'd put that right at the top. If you liked Matterhorn, and obviously you do like Tim O'Brien, you should stop everything you're doing and go read Fields of Fire by James Webb.
You convinced him, Admiral. He's on his way. And Weintraub did have a book about the truce. It's called Silent Night. It's just a good holiday read.
Yes. I have heard of it. I have not read it, but I have heard of it.
It's pretty lovely. Sarah on Facebook wonders about the starfish and the spider. She says, my husband went to West Point, and it's one of his favorites.
I have not read it. I have heard about it. I've heard it recommended by a bunch of people. You know, the best thing about doing your show, Kathleen, is I'm coming up with a whole bunch of books I obviously need to read. And please, for the caller or the Facebooker, Yes, it's a well-known book in and among military leaders. I have not gone through it, but I shall. And I think it does get high marks from the West Point crowd. As an Annapolis guy, maybe I'm a little late to that party, but I'll track it down.
Other books that we need to learn from, wars we need to learn, and they were painful lessons. I remember this book, Dereliction of Duty, Lyndon Johnson, Robert McNamara, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the lies that led to Vietnam.
Yeah, and we ought to recall that that book was written by then Major H.R. McMaster, who is now Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster and is the National Security Advisor.
Right.
So if there's anybody who needs to be able to speak truth to power in the Oval Office to Donald Trump, I think we've got to count on someone like Lieutenant General McMaster. That book is fundamental to understanding how the United States ended up in Vietnam, and it was really the fault of the generals in so many ways. It's a powerful book.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really love the fact that you did this. They're great recommendations and stretching us into new areas, and thank you for all your reading and for doing this.
Thank you so much, and I just to compliment all the folks from your listening area. Those are wonderful questions.
They're great, aren't they?
I've jotted down three or four books.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our pleasure. Admiral James Stavridis, our guest. The book is The Leader's Bookshelf. Thanks to Gretchen Brown for producing this hour and to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Thanks for all of your calls and suggestions that you gave the Admiral. We'll be with you tomorrow.